Super Scoreboard presents Scotland's Euro Stories with the Scottish Sun.
Hello, I'm Stephen Mill and welcome to Scotland's Euro Stories with the Scottish Sun, a podcast where we look back at our national side's appearances at European tournaments 1992, 1996 and then all the way up to Euro 2020. Remember, you can get all the latest news and views on Scotland in the Scottish Sun, as well as all the summer transfer moves and rumours at thescottishsun.co.uk. And I'm joined by the Scottish Sun's Head of Sport and Super Scoreboard pundit extraordinaire is Mr. Roger Hanna. How are you doing, Roger?
I'm good, Stephen. I think the listeners and the viewers who have been watching these podcasts, they'll be getting concerned now that you might be running out of old Scotland shirts to wear. You've got more you have got more old Scotland jerseys than our special guest today.
Well, I don't know about that. I've got one more left. I've got one more in the locker, which you'll see on the next episode. But as you can see, if you're watching this on our YouTube channel, if you're listening, then I will inform you who our guest is today. We have a former Scotland captain. Only got his first cap when he was 27 years old, but my God, did he make up for it. Did he make up for lost time? 51 caps and 3 goals. He is Mr. Braveheart himself. It's Colin Hendry. How you doing, Colin? You okay?
I'm great, yeah. All good. Listen, fantastic. Looking forward to the summer.
I really am. Yeah, it's going to be great. We'll chat about that, obviously, in a wee bit, and a wee walk down memory lane as well. I know you've got some fantastic stories from over the years as well. Just before we start, though, with the football, did you know, Roger, that Colin Hendry was a special guest at my 30th birthday party?
That's right, yeah.
No way.
So I was having a party.
20 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. So for my 30th birthday party, my friend decided to get Colin Hendry. Now, we'd done an event together, I think it was about 6 months before that or something, and we'd sort of stayed in touch. Yeah. And he turned up as a surprise guest.
And believe it or not, Roger, I had hair back then as well, mate.
So yeah, exactly.
There's a lot happened since then.
Did he buy a drink?
Well, it was a private party.
It was in a house party. It was even better.
It was in the house and it was just... I've done that a couple of times, but it was great just seeing the shock on your face and a lot of other people's faces as well. Like, they're like, another drink, they're like, is that Colin Hendry? Really? Can he be?
There was one guy who was there who, I don't know if you know, Roger, who works here at the radio station, Shane, our video guy. He's from New Zealand, right? Doesn't know anything about football. Later on that night, he came up to me and he was like, my God, I can't believe that Colin Hendricks is here. And I was like, you've got no idea who he is. He was like, nah, I just wanted to join in.
It's a decent gin.
It's very much so. So listen, Colin, let's get to the football then. I mentioned in your intro there, didn't make your international debut until you're were 27. It was a long time in coming, despite the fact you'd had a very decent career before you got there. Why did it have to be so long before you got your debut?
I think to be fair, there was some absolute incredible central defenders in and around prior to me getting my opportunity. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know I was with big Alex McLeish the other day, and I know Alex is probably, I don't know, what, 7-8 years older than me. And at that, you know, in and around the time prior to that, you've got him and Willie Miller together, who arguably are possibly Scotland's ever greatest central defensive partnership, you know, and obviously what they did at Aberdeen as well as club football. And of course, you've got Richard Gough as well. Mm-hmm. And you've got a lot of, can you call Scottish players world-class players? Because they're probably the ones that come close and, you know, So I think it was that. I think it really was nothing more than that. Hadn't it been selected at any level throughout my career until... Uh-huh. Well, I played it under 21. I mean, that was... When was that? Was that 89 or possibly even in 90? I think it was 1990. And I played in a B match at St. Johnston, McDermott Park, against East Germany. But nobody in that team got selected to promote themselves to the squad for the next tournament.
Yeah.
And I remember Andy Roxburgh saying, listen, if them did as well, but I think we didn't do any. I don't think any of us did well, to be fair, in that game, because none of us got selected.
Yeah. Are you the only person from Keith ever to get a Scotland cap?
I think I'm probably the only person. Keith in outlying areas, to be fair. I don't know. I think possibly. I think recently, There's a young lady, a young girl, under 16's just been capped, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Her name is not on the tip of my tongue. But other than that, I think, you know, and
Keith's number one football player we're sitting with here, Roger. That's what it is.
I mean, obviously the language up north is Doric.
Uh-huh.
So it's all Fitman and all that. The listeners will probably not even understand that. Anyway, so I just say it myself, and I've not written a book either. I've not written a book. But if I was to write a book, the headline would be "Just a Loon for Keith."
And
you, not, you know, the Braveheart thing. You get that all the time. The Braveheart stuff.
Yeah,
and all that.
But a lot of that was your upbringing helped forge that incredible bond that you had with the Tartan Army. So many of the Tartan Army are from the north of Scotland, are from Keith, or Inverness, or wherever, all the, as you say, the outlying areas. That definitely helped you build that rapport that you had with the fans.
And that has substantially stayed in such a strong way, because it was only on Saturday I was up at Peterhead with Netta, the North East Tartan Army. So we had a game of footy between ourselves for charity, for MND, at 12 o'clock, and then at night I did the dinner at night, told a few stories of the comedian. But it was, they looked after me so well. And it's Scotland, Roger. It's just typical Scotland. That's how it is. And, you know, there was one point when I finished chatting, my glass was always full. And I'm thinking, Christ, I can't keep drinking Guinness at this rate. So I'm thinking, crikey. But, we did. And such a proud thing for me.
Yeah.
It was a great. That was, I mean, my father, my late dad, he was, and my late wife Denise were both at Euro 96 and both at the World Cup as well, that sort of thing. So they managed to see that, and I knew that all the hard work it goes into even becoming a professional footballer. Yes, it can be a great life, a nice life, but you've got to work so hard to get to the very top.
Yeah, and you know, just by knowing you for a wee while, and obviously, you know, what you were saying there as well, you've achieved some fantastic things in your club career, winning the English Premier League, winning the Scottish title, Scottish Cups and all the rest of it. But I'm guessing pulling on the Scotland jersey is right up there.
Takes a bit of beating.
Yeah.
Steve, takes a bit of beating, you know. And I know we're going to talk about the Euros in 96 in a bit, but, you know, it was great for me as well, as because I was firmly involved with the Premiership in England. So, and we were at the top,
mm-hmm.
not the very, very top, because Man United, they started off at the beginning of the Premiership, they were the top dogs. But we fought them, and we gave them a good run. Eventually, we took over their mantle. But it was to be at that level was great, and, you know, it's exciting times.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll talk a lot about Craig Brown, a person I know you're so fond of as well, and I know that you'll miss a lot since his sad passing last year. But let's go straight to Euro 96 then. Mm. And obviously the big one was the England game, but the first big one was against Holland, who were a heck of a side. And we managed to, I've mentioned in this podcast,
battered us 0-0.
I was going to say,
that's how I've described it. If somebody asked me a question about the game, but sorry for interrupting as well, but battered us 0-0.
Yeah.
The corner count was ridiculous. I think it was 14-2, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
We, John, had three arms that day. We, John Collins, on the line. And you're playing, you know, but then again, I'm playing against the Bergkamps and the Kluiverts and all these players that play regular in the Prem.
Yeah, absolutely. I was just going to say it was a great 0-0 victory that we got against Holland. And actually, a great start to the tournament, because, you know, Holland would have been coming into that as probably one of the favourites for the tournament, given their squad.
That's the key. I think that's the key, and it's even more so now in this tournament we're approaching, that we don't lose the first game. I think it's so important that happens. And I must add that of all the atmospheres I've played in, that atmosphere at Villa Park against Holland is right up there. And I mean right up there, especially playing for Scotland.
Mm-hmm.
It was unbelievable. It really, really, really was. And the point did give us a good platform to build off of,
yeah,
to be fair.
And you went to Wembley next, and it was almost like an English Premier League game.
Yep.
It was you and Shearer, it was Colin Calderwood and Teddy Sheringham, it was Stuart McCall and Paul Gascoigne. Mm. How odd was that, an international against guys you knew so well?
It wasn't odd, it was brilliant. The disappointing thing was the result, obviously.
Yeah.
but it was great. At no point within the game did you feel that you were going to really lose that game. You know, even at 1-0, we kept knocking. I know that early in the second half they went 1-0 up, but we kept knocking, and, you know, we get the penalty, and on another day, Gary scores that. Gary will score that penalty. Of course, you've got Yuri Geller in the background giving it the beginning about moving the ball and all that, which is a load of rubbish, I'll not swear. But I think, in all honesty, the 2-0 flattered England completely. And any Englishman or English people listen to that, they'll say, oh, you're a bit bitter. But to be fair, I think it flattered England. And, of course, Gazza was getting taken off. I mean, I'll mention Gazza before you two do. Gazza was getting taken off. He was coming off just prior to the pen, and they said, oh, let's get the pen done and then we'll take him off. And, of course, we missed the pen. Gazza stays on straight up the park, does what he does, and he's done it to better footballers than me.
Well,
he's scored goals and done things to better footballers than me, than what he did. And arguably, this is what I say to people in England, if I'm talking in England, he's arguably England's greatest ever footballer. And that's not for me to discuss or debate. That's for the English fans and the English, because it's their player.
Well, you're among friends now. You can say Stuart McCall should attract a run.
So I had an unwritten rule with Craig Brown, where he said, big man, because you're a bit older and you're in your twilight and you've eventually got to where you want to be, playing for your country, playing in tournaments. He said, for the sake of, in your last man, just put your hand up. Put your hand up and just say sometimes. So I did it as well as in 2000 against England at Hampden, when we got beat 2-0 before we went to beat England at Germany. And England at Wembley. Sorry. Scholes had run off Barry Ferguson, I think, and I took the blame, and I said, well, Paul Scholes, and like, but in all honesty, like, as if I'm going to be picking up Paul Scholes, it's a set of pieces, you know what I mean? But so Craig says, he said, don't just say, just take that. I said, listen, it's fine, it's no problem. I took it on the chin, and it's an iconic goal, you know, and I'm part of it. And if I'd taken him out, I would have got sent off, you know, and I would have missed the next game, which we've not came to yet. But it was soul destroying to have lost the game. And then after the game, we went back to Warwick, and we trained at the Young Farmers Union headquarters, which was next door to the hotel in Warwick. And Craig said, listen, you can have a few drinks tonight, because I don't think, certainly not playing for Scotland, had I seen a changing room so disappointed, and the tears and everything that goes with it, because we're human after all. We have to win. We've got to win for the sake of the Tartan Army, for the sake of the country, for the sake of ourselves as players, for the sake of the families, for the sake of everyone. And we didn't. So we took it bad. We did. We really, really, really did take it bad.
But you raised yourself and got that victory against a very good Switzerland side. I mean, we're taking on a good Switzerland side this summer. That was a good Switzerland side. They'd already drawn with England at Wembley. Yeah. And you managed to beat them at Villa Park.
Yeah, and the thing about the game against Switzerland was that, of course, not thinking that England would absolutely smash Holland to bits, which they did. But, and I don't know how this will sound, but Seaman lets one through his legs. So, and I could say another one, but I'm not going to, because it's visual and it's might be kids listening. But if he hadn't let one through his legs, David Seaman, then that one goal. But of course, you go back to how it's been generally for Scotland, that we don't score enough goals. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and maybe might be a bit different this time, because in the middle of the park, with McTominay and McGinn and one or two others, we're contributing goals. We are contributing goals from the middle of the park. So if that stays, or it gets a bit better in the last five or six games that we've been involved in recently, then we stand a chance.
Are there similarities? It's strange because that team that Craig had was built around the three centre-halves.
Yes.
Yourself, Calderwood and Boyd.
Yeah.
And the wing-backs and a hard-working midfield. You could maybe see even then not scoring enough goals is the problem. Yeah. This time now, it's the three centre-backs. It's the wing backs. It's a tight, hard working midfield.
Big similarities, yeah.
It's strange, the two teams that have qualified for the Euros, they're built around that same sort of framework, aren't
yeah, it? And in all honesty, as well, as you've got still you've got players that are playing that are winning premierships in England, winning Champions League as well. Paul Lambert was when he was at Dortmund, you know, was winning the Champions League, and then you've got players playing at the top of the Premiership. So the lads at Blackburn, and you got the lads that you know. McTominay's winning the FA Cup at the weekend, and John McGinn's going to be in the Champions League next year. You know, I think that they come fourth in the league. So,
yeah,
you've got a lot of different similarities, and it's just the goal scoring for me. It was always the if we can get ourselves out of sight sometimes in games, because the first goal is very important.
Yeah,
yeah. I mean, well, you know, the Switzerland game, you played up front for quite a bit.
I looked at Craig and he said, "Right, get back." He said, "Right, call, get up." And right, get back. So Coisty scored the worldie. Is it right, call, get back? Oh no, they've scored again. So right, get back up front. I'm like,
see, that'll be his old
pal. But I loved that because I started as a striker.
I started as a striker.
Well, that'll be his old pal Archie Knox, because he played you at centre forward. That's for Dundee, right at the very start. Yeah,
well, he changed me from centre forward to centre back, Archie.
Was it?
Archie did that.
Okay.
Did you have doubts about that at the time? Not as glamorous as
my career.
No, when they first said, "Colin, you're not a striker anymore, you're a centre half."
It's a hit. It's a hit to your, you know, how you feel about and what you've done as a player growing up. But with the greatest respect, I'm just happy to be a professional footballer. Yeah. I was just happy to be a professional footballer. And, you know, people say, how did you think you did as a footballer? And I'm like, well, that's my record, which I wouldn't change any part of that. And I know players have got an absolute trail of trophies, but I'm really so happy with what I've achieved in my career. Mm-hmm. But I think the defining part of it all for me was in 94-95 and 96-97 in the Prem, to be named in the Premiership Team of the Year from your peers. That's it for me. That's really tells you. So you think, but I, we're talking about the three guys earlier, Richard Goff and Willie Miller and Big Eck, Alec McLeish. You're forgetting about Alan Hansen, who's absolute Rolls Royce of a centre back, yeah, as mm-hmm. well, you know. Yeah. So I play it down, but at the same time, I wouldn't change, as you said earlier, I wouldn't change any part of my, I'd change quite a bit of my personal life. It's a bit different.
I think we've all been
everybody
there.
Would do that.
Yeah, I think so. Just to sort of complete the chat about the three matches at the Euros then, obviously extreme disappointment after the England game. Again, sort of that we've done the job against Switzerland, but it wasn't enough. It was out with our control. David Seaman, as you mentioned, when you're getting back for pre-season training and you're going back and speaking to David Batty and Shearer and all the rest of it, what's their chat? Are they
the partnering shot before we went to the Euros was the headline in the Blackburn paper was, "I'll bring my medal home to show Colin," or words to that effect.
Mm-hmm.
So from Big Al, Alan, Big Al, we call it Big Al. So I'm still waiting. I'm still waiting to see that medal.
And England are still waiting as well, Colin.
Yeah.
Listen, you obviously living in England, it's not easy. And the WhatsApp groups between being an ex-Man City, but I support all the teams, I support and look out for all the teams that I played for, which is a few, to be fair. But generally, Man City, Blackburn Rovers, Rangers, Bolton, Blackpool, you know, Preston for two games, Coventry City. So all the teams, I wish them well and I want them to do well. Ones are a bit closer to me. The City had 2 years there. When I got there, they were third bottom, I think. When I left, they were third top. And they'd play the year and everything. So they had a great time at Man City. Rangers winning the treble. Blackburn, 10 years of my career, more or less. That was phenomenal. So I do look out for everybody. But yeah, I forgot the question, Roger. What did you You forgot the question.
No, we were just saying that England are still waiting on Alan Shearer, still waiting on that medal. Yeah.
That was a discussion. Yeah. I mean,
Do you cope every summer when, or not every summer, every second summer when obviously the expectations, we get a little bit of it up here, or we get quite a lot of it up here.
He gets back to Keith.
Yeah. do you just disappear back up to Keith?
I watched the game when Italy beat them in the pens. With my mum and Keith, and all I did was on my social, but my Facebook's private in relation to the rest of my social media, and I just put a headline. What I wrote was just, "Does anyone fancy any more Parmesan?" and that was it. You know, and the rage, the inbox was bursting, but. I've got a lot of good friends who are, and yeah, that was talking about the WhatsApp group. Yeah. So I've got friends who are all different teams, and it's continual. But of course, with the build up to the Euros, I mean, if you look at England's front six, and I know they've still got to whittle their squad down as well a wee bit. It's a frightening. And I think defensively could be their Achilles heel.
Mm-hmm.
I think that might be, but their offensive side of the team, and the choice they've got.
How does it compare to the England team that you played against in 96?
I would say...
Because you had, as we've already mentioned, Shearer, Sheringham, Gazza, you know, guys like McManaman who went on to win Champions Leagues and stuff like that.
Yeah, I like the look of what they've got from an offensive point of view. And I would think that's going to take a lot of stopping. I would take a lot of stopping. But then again, you know how football's... You know, just look at the weekend, Man United go and beat City when they're absolutely odds on to go and beat them. And then England, if England concede the first goal, how do the players and the team then react to that? Because if there's a second goal, like what there was at the weekend, then backsides do go a wee bit. Things change, mentality changes.
What about our chance? It'd be the other way about. We're probably stronger defensively, better organised with Steve at the helm. Can we break that cycle? Can we get beyond the group stage this summer?
Well, I've got a ticket waiting for me if we do. I'm not going to the three games because I'm actually working fan zone and bits and bobs. So, but I've been promised a ticket if we do get to the next stage. I think with the games that we'd played running up to the end of the tournament weren't great. We weren't great. The bubble had burst a wee bit. Then Germany have two outstanding results against France and Holland. And you think, are they just gearing up now? Are they just getting to a point where they're beginning to show their teeth a wee bit? Because it'll be difficult for us. But we can't lose the first game.
And obviously it's different from 96 as well, because third place teams get through.
Yes.
So a win, you know, could be enough out of the
three games. Against Switzerland again.
Yes, exactly.
That's a bit different from when we played.
Roger's already mentioned the sort of similarities between the way Steve Clarke sets up his team and Craig Brown set up his team. Let's talk a wee bit about Craig, because I know he's a really important guy to you. Yeah. You know, go right back to your first sort of interactions with him. 93 would have been your first cap, so Andy Roxburgh still would have been in charge. Craig would have been the assistant, I assume. We've heard from other people on this podcast about, you know, how different they were. Yeah. When Craig came in, excuse me, he tried to create a sort of club atmosphere.
Yeah.
What are your initial sort of memories of working with Craig?
The thing about Craig, and having known the persons you've had in on the podcast, there'll be one person in particular will have said this as well, and at his funeral we sat together, me and Darren Jackson, and he said the one thing about Craig, he always made you feel that you were better and that you could go out and beat, doesn't matter who you were playing against. He always gave you that lift. He always talked everything up, and we went out most games like that. And that's why he had a great success, you know, even qualifying for the tournaments as well as. But he was an all-round father figures type to me.
A few other people have said that exact phrase as well.
Right. So within the football, I think he only had a go at me once. I think, and that would have been in Norway, and played Norway in Bordeaux at half time, because I wouldn't have shut up, and he told me to shut them, which he never swears. And he was great when I lost Denise, my late wife. So he was in the pressing area, and he knocked on the door with Archie one night, and he said, "Right, big man, okay, let's be going out for something to eat and a pint." He was solid all the way through the phone calls and stuff as well as throughout her illness and, you know, when things took a turn for the worst. But he was more than just a manager, you know. And as an international manager, the domestic managers you're seeing every day, you're involved with every day. Well, I think Craig honestly tried his best to put the domestic manager into the international manager that he was for Scotland, because he was never away for the phone and on contact. It's crazy. But it was great for us because it was the reassurance. And even when you had an injury, because whether there was players in the team that you would maybe doubt he's injured, you know, you'd be thinking, "Oh, hold on a minute, is he actually injured?" For the players that you knew were injured were always injured. Mm-hmm. So if I wasn't making it, I wasn't going to be playing for Blackburn at the weekend.
Yeah.
If I wasn't playing for Scotland on a Tuesday night or a Wednesday night, I'm not going to be playing for Blackburn at the weekend. Mm-hmm. Even although with Kenny Dalglish in charge, who was exactly the same as pulling the other way.
Yeah.
So, but that, yeah, Craig, I can't, you know, talk about him highly enough in relation to a human being more than anything.
Yeah, and I think obviously all this, the people who turned up to his funeral as well as testament to, like, from across football as well. Did you manage to see him in the last sort of like couple of years or so?
Oh yeah, yeah. I'd spoken a few times, and he was quite keen to tell me what to tell Callum, my son, as a striker, because he was on loan at Aberdeen.
Yeah,
and Craig had been at the game, and I was at a game as well when Callum was at. When Callum had played for St Johnstone at Aberdeen, I was at a game and I was Craig's guest. And then things moved a bit health-wise on a negative. And I think I spoke to him about, it was about four weeks prior, or I got a text from him 4 weeks prior, just before his passing.
Mm-hmm.
But he was quite... I'll always remember certain things that people would say, especially football people. And he said, tell Callum, hit it first time. It doesn't matter where it lands, tell him to hit it first time, see what happens. Mm-hmm. So I've told Callum this, and there's a couple of times he's like, so that rings true. That's something that Callum's a goal scorer, obviously. He's a bit of an injury-ravaged season this season. He did 3 months out with his MCL at Salford City. But he still scores, he weighs in his goals. But he says, yeah, try and hit things first time. It's not easy, Dad, because if you miss the ball, I said, no, listen, I know as well. I know that as well.
I used to be a striker. That was it. Yeah,
I know exactly how it is.
Yeah, absolutely. some really fond memories of Craig Brown. And, you know, like, just to sort of like, we're talking about the Euro specifically, we can't not mention, obviously, the World Cup and how proud you would have been to be the captain as well. Obviously, with everything that happened with Gary McAllister and the boon and all the rest of it. We won't get into that, but, you know, like, from your point of view, it must have been, you know, like, that is the... I was talking about, you know, pinnacles of your career, leading Scotland down an opening game in a World Cup against Brazil.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just fairy tale stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I was lucky as well because Gary'd been coming back from a hamstring or calf injury in the December, and he was playing for Coventry Reserves one wintry night in December, and I got a phone call from a press reporter just saying, "Have you heard about Gary McAllister tonight?" I said, "Yeah, well, he's doing his rehab, he's playing another game, and he's, you know, trying to get fit, and hopefully he just keeps fit for the finals, you know, the World Cup finals." He said, "Oh no, he's got a bad one tonight, Colin. He's taking a bad one." And I said, "Right, how bad?" He said, "I think you'll be missing the World Cup." I'm like, "You're joking." Because Gary, for me, as much as I played so many times with Alan Shearer and an outstanding world-class finisher, he was just a striker. Yeah, I know. People was like, just a striker. Does the hardest thing in the game, scores goals. But the world-class player that I played with all round was Gary McAllister. He was probably the best player I played with, you know, because, and then he showed that as well, of course, as at the age of 33. He leaves he leaves Coventry to sign for Liverpool, and then he's a catalyst to win the League Cup, the FA Cup, and the European Trophy of Trebling. And he was the reason at that point in time for me how Liverpool did so well. But no, Gary was going to miss the World Cup. And then the reporter said, listen, that means you'll be captain. And I'm like, right. So as bittersweet as it sounds, and it is, it was just a great honour for me as well, as you know, mm-hmm. to walk out at... in Paris and with a kilt on.
Was that a Craig Brown idea, was it not?
It was Craig, and then the SFA, they made a good decision by supporting them at this point, because they didn't always, I think, but it was a masterstroke. It really was a masterstroke, because when we walked out onto the pitch before the game to acknowledge the Brazil fans, because Craig said, he said, listen, go out, there's 2 hours before the game, go out, sample the atmosphere, enjoy the occasion, see the family, do everything that you've plenty of time, there's plenty of time. And we wandered out, and we, of course, we went across to the Brazil fans and acknowledged them, and they were unbelievable. You know, I think you could still smoke in the stadium back at that point. You were allowed to have a cigarette or whatever. So there's a bit of a haze, and the samba beat, it's the closer you got to them, and they're all going to one side and then going to the other, and the Brazil women of, oh, mental man. So, tight tops and everything, you're thinking, wow. And then, of course, we go down the other side and see the Tartan Army and bottles of Buckfast in the air and that. Tattoos are all spelt correctly.
You've played so many huge games. Was that completely different from anything else? And is that what this team's going to face that first night in Munich?
I think
it's
so.
The opening game, it's a host nation, there's a special atmosphere. Do they need to be switched on? Not to be carried away by the whole occasion.
I don't think the level of player that we've got now, who are right at the very top, that won't affect them. It may affect one or two who haven't maybe played much international level or been involved much at international level for the atmosphere, because it'll be an atmosphere that they've never seen before. That's for sure. I mean, the host nation at home, because the whole stadium will be driving the Germans forward. Mm-hmm. You know, Germans on. That's what it's going to be like. A little bit different for us when we were in Paris against Brazil, because it was neutral.
Yeah.
You know, there was one set of supporters one end, one set of supporters the other.
It could even be harder this time.
It'll be harder. I think it will be harder, because 80%, I don't know how many tickets we get, but 78% is probably going to be supporting Germany, because they're on their own patch.
It's in Germany. Same. Yeah, absolutely. And also, you know, you're talking about, it's not just the host nation, it's a really good host nation as well.
Oh, listen, they'll be there.
It's one of the superpowers of world football.
They'll be there or thereabout. Mm-hmm. There's absolutely no doubt they will be there come the shake.
Yeah.
You know, going into that quarterfinals. If they're not in the quarterfinals, I'd be completely shocked.
Yeah,
I really would.
Listen, Colin, we've got I don't know if you've spied our trophy for our quiz.
It's a bit skinny.
No, it's a wee bit skinny.
It needs a bit of meat on it.
Well, listen, it will look great on your mantelpiece against the rest of your medals. So we'll get to the question in just a wee second. Got some quick fire questions about your teammates, though, from your Scotland days. Let's sort of frame it like that. So who was your roommate?
Kev Gallagher. Me, Kev.
Any stories about Kev? Was he annoying?
No, he made a good cup of tea.
Did he? That's good.
A cup of tea, wee man. You there and get that done, wee man. Yeah,
Are you sort of pulling rank?
And he had more caps than me, I think.
53 to your 51.
Yeah, he had more caps than me, yeah. But I did get him on the club class flight to America when we were going pre-Euros 96 and pre-World Cup 98, where there was only so many business class seats,
right, okay,
for the players. So the more caps you had, the more chance you had of getting a business class
seat.
Is
that how they did it?
John Spencer was absolutely distraught, the wee man.
he was
gutted.
John Spencer doesn't need lots of leg room. I mean, let's be honest.
in for a free beer.
Yeah, absolutely. Who's in charge of the tunes in the dressing room? Did you have a CD player, cassettes, gramophones?
Eight track. Eight track, would it have been? I can't remember. I actually quite liked it being a bit, you know, quieter.
Did you?
Ah, yeah. I mean, I'd be.
I'd
mean,
be like that.
Modern day. Yeah. I mean, I was coaching a bit in the Northern Prem, about over a year ago now, at part time and just helping out more or less. And you go in the dressing room, and you kind of hear yourself think, never mind speak and chat, and it's booming. It's actually booming, and I can't even work out.
You've reached that age, Colin. So it's guys, just noise.
So talking about Coisty and a bit of Rammstein and a bit of AC/DC. Listen, I'm Iron Maiden mad and AC/DC, and I've seen them all as well as. I didn't mind a bit of that.
Right,
I wouldn't mind a bit of that because I could relate to that.
Right, okay, that's fine. So that's fine. Who was the teacher's pet? We've had somebody come up twice on this one. Teacher's pet.
John Collins.
Oh, John Collins.
BJC.
That's a new one. Yeah, that's like that. One.
The other person that came up was Pat Nevin.
And McCoist.
And McCoist.
Should have took Coisty to the World Cup.
So he wasn't that much of a teacher's pet.
We should have took Coisty to the World Cup.
Who was the joker in the dressing room? Coisty?
Yeah. Coisty and Tosh McKinley. Tosh was good as well. Tosh was funny. Some were naturally... I mean, I've got to look at Coisty sometimes and I'm saying, he actually managed Rangers. And I'm like, how did he manage that? But he's, yeah. The thing I would say about, especially, well, both competitions, the Euro 96 and World Cup 98, was that the harmony in the team was absolutely brilliant. There wasn't one negative, and born through what Craig organised and what we had to choose from. But and I think the goalie leaving America to fly back early when he realised he wasn't going to start the first game against Brazil was possibly, but that was just something that he had to do because I was very close to Andy, very, very close. And he said to me, he came to me, he said, Cole, I'm not going to play the first game, am I? I said, well, if we're looking at how the team selection is, the probably is, and he made his own decision on that. But there wasn't anything. But the goalie felt he had to do that, and he did do that. But there was nothing. Even when we were all there and he was there, it was unbelievable. I can't tell half the stories.
Save it for the book.
I should keep it for the book if I write the book.
Yeah, the loon for Keith. Best singer, national anthem. Surely you've got a good.
I battered it out.
Aye,
Flower of Scotland. Oh yeah, I gave it. Yeah,
yeah.
I've done it a few times after dinner speaking and all that. get the big freedom out as well.
You've already mentioned Gary McAllister, best player.
Yeah, Gary Mack.
Gary Mack. And what shirts have you got in terms of swapping shirts?
I got Shearer's number 9.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he put my shirt up the other week at a charity event in London. Because an agent rang me. He said, Cole, is that the shirt that you swapped with Alan? And I said, yeah, that's right. He said, oh, it's just gone for about a lot of money. I can't remember, but it went to charity.
Yeah.
And of course, they didn't get one against Brazil in the opening game because I got drug tested.
Oh, so
and
good.
I got the hook. Right, big man, you're coming with me.
And that, I mean, for people who don't know, that's...
John got Ronaldo's shirt.
Yeah.
And he's been on next to me all day sort of thing. But listen, I was going from Mizuno to Nike.
Mm-hmm.
So Nike had, the contract ended at the end of the World Cup. So Nike had given me about 8 shirts to get signed. The blue away Brazil kit and the gold home kit. And who was the lads that came along? I can't recall the two lads that came along, and I said, get them all signed. So they got them all signed for me, and I gave them a shirt each.
Mm-hmm.
So they all have that shirt, but I've got a couple shirts.
Right, okay.
So I've got the exact shirts from that. But, I've kept everything, more or less.
Are they all in a box somewhere? Or
no, they're all framed, and they're all over the place. Kids have got them.
Right, okay.
Callum's got a host, and I don't think Megan's too happy as missing.
Yeah, I could imagine. By the way, that's still very cool. So listen, as I mentioned, we're going to finish with our Summer European Football Tournament quiz. Currently top of the leaderboard is Stuart McCall with 7, who Roger was like, oh, I don't know anything about this.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I'm going to be rubbish at this.
A bit of double bluff going on there.
I'm the same.
Absolutely smashed it. Kevin Gallagher is bottom It's either two or three that he's got. It's a really poor score. Really poor.
I thought you were going to say it's a really tough quiz.
No, it's absolutely not a tough quiz. I don't know what Kevin Gallagher was doing. So here's how we're going to do it, Colin. Minute on the clock. We're going to fire through as many questions as you can. And yeah.
How many have I got to beat? Two.
There you go.
I'm looking at the platform here.
I think you'll be fine. Right, okay. I think we've got a minute on the clock, and your time, Colin, begins now. What was England's official song for Euro 96? It wasn't Vindaloo. We'll move on. Okay. Who managed Germany at Euro 92?
Beckenbauer.
Which team topped Scotland's group of qualifiers for this year's Euros? Who was top of our qualifying group?
Spain.
Where was the Euro 2020 final held?
Wembley.
Which Partick Thistle player was part of the Euro 96 squad?
Buff. Brian, what's his name?
How many teams will play at Euro 2024?
24.
In what group were Scotland in Euro 92? Group 1 or 2?
Two.
How many times has Germany won the tournament?
Four.
In what city will Scotland face Switzerland this year?
Cologne.
Who missed for England in the penalty shootout against Germany in Euro 96?
Southgate.
Okay. Managed to get through 10 questions.
I'm liking this.
Roger's an expert, so he'll confirm the right answers. What was England's official song for Euro 96?
I took a wild Vindaloo.
Three lines.
It's coming home.
And that's exactly why.
And it's still
got it. It's still exactly why I forgot it.
Are they releasing that again?
No, hopefully not.
Probably not.
Who managed Germany at Euro 92? You said Beckenbauer.
Was it wee Bertie?
It was Bertie Vokes.
Bertie Vokes. It was one of two.
Which team topped Scotland's group in the qualifiers? It was Spain. Mm, that's you on the scoreboard.
And I'm off and running.
Yes, exactly. Where was the Euro 2020 final held? It was Wembley, up to two. Which Partick Thistle player was part of the Euro 96
Brian,
squad?
No.
You will kick yourself. Up your neck of the woods, Nicky Walker.
Nicky was at Partick?
Nicky was Walker. A Partick goalie when he went as the third choice at Euro 96.
I never knew that.
Yep.
Nicky Walker was the correct answer. Well,
Nicky played for Leicester, for Rangers, for Motherwell, and he played for Partick.
Yep. He must have brought shortbread on those international trips. He must have got some of the.
He's got it up his jumper. Last time I seen him.
How many teams will play at Euro 2024? 24, that's correct. That's up to three. And what group were Scotland in Euro 92? You had the choice of one or two.
And I got it wrong.
You went for two. Yep. You got it right. Well done.
Two,
that is four. You up to four. How many times have Germany won the tournament, Roger?
Nah, twice.
Four?
I said four.
You said four? Three.
Oh!
That's close, isn't it?
Close. In which city will Scotland play Switzerland this year, Roger?
Cologne.
Correct. Yeah. And, well, of course, who missed?
Gareth Southgate.
In the penalty shoot against Germany in Euro 96.
Six. Second place.
So I'm after Stuart.
McCall still leads.
I'm happy.
I mean,
I qualify for Europe on that.
The radio station are going to be absolutely furious when they find out how much this is for posting packaging.
I'm sure producer John can take it down. He'll drive down with it.
That's what it is, wherever Stuart is. So, Colin, that is a very, very decent score. Puts you second on the leaderboard. I think you can hold your head up high after that.
I'm all right with
pleased
that.
With that. And thanks so much for all your chat today. It's been very.
I've enjoyed it, guys, actually. I wasn't quite sure what I was coming. What I was actually going to come and do.
Yeah.
But I've enjoyed it because it brings the memories back and, you know, talking about Craig and just that'll all come flooding back. The problem, of course, is the infamous goal will be shown all over at the beginning. So I'll just go into hiding. I'll just go in the south of France to my daughters for a couple of days.
You need to go to Keith beside your mum and watch the final. Yeah. Especially the more any England games, just watch them in Keith. That's probably the superstition. Okay.
Yeah.
That's what you'll need to do. So, Colin, thank you very much for joining us on Scotland's Euro Stories with the Scottish Sun. And remember, you can stay ahead of the game with the Scottish Sun Sport online. Just head to thescottishsun.co.uk. Roger Hanna, thank you very much for being here. And also, you can check out Clyde One Super Scoreboard, the YouTube channel, and the podcast feed for all our podcasts and everything that Super Scoreboard does, of course. Loads of episodes up there. And remember, you can leave your comments on YouTube as well. We'll see you next time for some more Scotland Euro Stories. Bye-bye.
Super Scoreboard presents Scotland's Euro Stories with the Scottish Sun.